Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show number 16 of Absolutely Intercultural, where I will try to say as little as possible, as I have a terrible cold and am liable to break into coughing or sneezing fits at any moment. In this show, we'll be hearing a great deal from this person.
I'm Greg Hoof, and I studied for 4 years on the European Business Administration, a partnership which was formed between 4 colleges, one in London, one in France, one in Germany, and one in Spain. And you chose basically to study in your own country, or the country of your mother tongue, and one of the others. And so I chose France. So I started the course in 1987, and that was hosted by the École Supérieure de Commerce à Reims. And as part of the degree, you had to spend 6 months of placement in each country. Ended up studying or working for Maurice Chandon in their sales department in Epinay for 3 months. And then this was followed by a further 3 months working for a company called Garrett. And that was in Epinal in the Vosges.
Greg is, in fact, my brother, and the running theme throughout this show will be family, because it suddenly occurred to me that between us, we have lots of varied experiences of working in different cultures in our various ways, beginning with my father, who worked in a French audit office for the first 2 years of his married life, but then took us back to the UK where the pay was better. But since he claims that he can't remember anything of the experience, we go absolutely personal with my brother. We'll also be hearing from my 2 daughters, Gwen and Mia, about what it's like being bilingual in English and Danish as we go absolutely linguistic. And finally, we'll be hearing from my husband, Tony Fox, who went down the road to Germany to a conference and experienced an embarrassing moment, but that is absolutely confidential. But first, we'll go absolutely interactive and say thank you to Bruce Stroud, who alerted us to the existence of an intercultural chat room with the aim of promoting intercultural understanding. You'll find it at www.freewebs.com/crossing_borders. You can click on the link at our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, where you can also subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or add yourself to our Frapper map, where 74 people have already left their pins to tell us where they come from as they listen to the show. All I remembered from the time Greg was working in France was that we got a lot of champagne that Christmas. So when he talked to me recently about his work, what he said was as new to me as it will be to you. What work did he do and what was it like? Let's go absolutely personal.
The placement in Maurice Chandon, I say, was with the sales department. And the job entailed putting together a requirements document for them to automate their sales reporting processes and data gathering processes. And what I found was it was quite difficult at that stage, with only a year's worth of business French of experience, to really get under the skin of, first of all, exactly what they were after, and then, more importantly, to actually deliver on something that would be of significant use. And certainly when I look back on it and I realize the amount of detail that goes into that sort of thing in the companies that I've worked for since, I realize that probably the quality of work that I was able to produce for them was somewhat limited. The second placement with Garrett was in their European marketing department. Now, Garrett produce turbos. And in the past, they produced them mainly for generators and for trains, but increasingly, they were seeing growth in the diesel car market. And so what I was asked to do within the marketing department was very much to study the European press and basically make sure that we were across all the developments, which manufacturers were pushing forward with diesel motors, understand what the tax regimes were like in the different countries based on petrol taxation, and really to pull together an analysis that allowed them to forecast their sales for the coming years. Now, that I felt was far more aligned to what they would have had to have done anyway. And equally, I believe that the way I was sort of approaching it and the support that they gave me, it was something that was actually of worth, and you know, was an intrinsic part of what they were hoping to deliver in that particular period of time.
You've obviously had a long work experience now since you graduated with your degree. Looking back, can you see any major differences between your work experience in France and what you've experienced since in the UK?
I think what the main difference is, it's probably the ability to understand the full scope of not just what the job entails, but the important factors of the culture of a company, indeed the personality of the industry. And that always takes time. And it's only once you have sort of been able to spend that time that you can actually pull together sort of the understanding that truly adds value to a company. And to be able to ask a student who isn't operating necessarily in their own language, who isn't operating within their own culture, and has only got a limited amount of time to try and pull together, you know, the experience, you just have to accept that they can only really skim the surface. And so what it takes is probably very good management from the placement company to make sure that, you know, they see this as one part of an overall process and they use the placement students appropriately.
So, operating in a second language learned later in life is a challenge. What's it like if you know two languages equally well, that you are truly bilingual? My two daughters, Gwen and Mia, operate mainly in English at home and in Danish at school and with their friends. We'll find out what it's like as we go absolutely linguistic. If somebody asks you where you're from, what do you say?
England.
I say Britain.
Even though you live in Denmark?
Yeah.
So the next question then is, do you feel Danish or do you feel English or British?
I feel British when I'm in Britain and Danish when I'm in Denmark.
Same here.
So that means you feel Danish most of the time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And British.
And what is it that's Danish about you?
Well, we speak Danish most of the time.
We go to Danish school and have Danish friends. We just live in half Denmark. Danish, half English world. So.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes people here in Denmark, they say, "Do you speak Danish?" And that happened yesterday, didn't it? How do you feel when they ask that?
Well, yesterday I was sort of in my own world, so yeah. I didn't really think about it, and it doesn't happen that often, but when it does, I just think it's sort of...
strange.
I don't really mind, because I'm not Danish. I mean, if I was Danish, I would mind, but... yeah.
So you don't really mind?
Well, I don't think about it.
You don't? Okay. At home, we speak English mainly, don't we?
Yeah.
Do you think we should speak mostly Danish instead?
No.
Why not?
Because
we come from England, don't we?
I don't know why, but at school and things, I feel more confident in Danish. But at home, I feel more confident in English.
Mm-hmm. Some people say that when you go to live in a country, you should just speak that country's language all the time. What do you think of that?
No, I think you should keep your own language.
Yeah.
At least, you know, hidden away somewhere. You should at least know how to speak it, but, you know.
Mm. And now you've learnt Danish and English since you were babies. So I want to know, do you ever mix them up?
Yeah, we do all the time.
So do you sometimes say some English words when you're with your Danish friends?
Yeah, and they understand.
Why do they understand?
Because they have English at school now, so they sort of understand most of it.
Okay, so it's a real mistake that you make, is it? It's not just for fun that you do it.
No, it's a real mistake.
Oh, okay.
Only for me.
Yeah. Back with Greg, I discovered the critical role your supervisors play in an internship.
Do you think then that the companies looked after you properly? And if so, what is it that they did which you appreciated?
I think the second company, more so than Moët & Chandon, so Gallet, were very supportive. And I'm sure in no small part was that due to the fact that the manager herself had spent time in England as a student and on placement. So, you know, even on a personal level, she probably had a great deal of empathy with, I suppose, the challenges of being a placement student and what they would bring. So I think her own understanding of the situation, I think the nature of the role, and therefore there was an ongoing dialogue. It wasn't a case of the student arrives, here's your project brief, away you go, come back to me at the end of the period of time. It was very much, you know, daily support, daily conversations, and it basically established a relationship that was going to work. Now, was that peculiar to a placement student, or was that probably good management practice regardless of the situation? Well, probably more so the latter, but it certainly was of most use to me at that stage.
And were you working in the same place as you had been to college? What I'm getting at is, what did you do after work? Were you able to socialise with your colleagues, or did you just go back to your student friends?
The first placement was in the adjacent town to college. So, yes, I was tending to go back to see my college friends. The second one, however, was in the Vosges, so a good 200, 300 miles away from college. So what I tended to do is during the week, I would either be simply at home after a day at work with some socializing, sometimes with the people from work, more so just with friends that I'd made, I don't know, through playing football or whatever in the local town. But maybe the weekends, I tended to go back to the college town.
Now that you've been working in Britain for a number of years, would you say that you could point to any distinct differences between the French way of working and the British way of working?
I would say that the British way of working, and again, one can only judge it on the companies that you've been with, but the British way of working was that the hours would tend to be longer, the relationships up and down the organisation would tend to be more relaxed and informal, and yes, there would be more social activity with people from work than there would be necessarily than experienced in France. But that's easy for me to say after, goodness me, 15 years or so now of working in England, in Britain. What I can't obviously judge is what the state of play is now in the working culture of France.
I've forced you to look at differences between countries, but you've also worked in several different companies. Do you think that the culture of the company is more important than the culture of the country or not?
I think it is more important. I've tended to work for large companies in Britain, and even between those companies, the personality of the company is very different. So working where I am at the moment, part of a media company, it is, you do have the impression that it is a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week company, and therefore there is great expectation of flexibility in all the departments, even if you're not directly involved in the media side of things, which is very different from a retail company when I first started work in Britain, which was very operationally led in terms of everything was around the trading figures that were reported on religiously day by day, and therefore very much driven by the company's business and indeed the management of that company. And equally, I know people who will work for much smaller companies where the feeling is that it is more relaxed. There isn't as much pressure. I'm sure there is in different ways, but it doesn't come across as there being as much pressure on the individuals within the team because they have to hit these huge targets to appease the city or what have you. So my initial impression is that it's the company that dictates the culture. But again, I'm sure there are some common threads within British workers that will be very different from sort of the equivalent criteria that you would see in other countries.
Now let's go absolutely confidential and discover how my husband got caught out recently at a conference in Germany.
Of course, I was very flattered. It was nice to be invited as an expert to somebody else's country. It was intimidating too, because the entire meeting was conducted in German. The first talk was excellent, as far as I could tell. The man stood up and reviewed everything there was to know about wind farms, birds, migration, collision, all the possible problems with the environment. The slides were brilliant. Of course, I couldn't understand a word. When he came to the end, I expected the entire meeting to erupt into applause. And of course I did. But nobody else did. All there was the restrained rolling of knuckles on the table. Something I wasn't ready for at all. Not only was it a cultural shock, but it was profoundly unsatisfying. You couldn't reward a speaker for such a wonderful presentation with just this sound, this restrained sound. And there I was, red-faced, caught out. Another cultural interaction.
If you have ever experienced an intercultural faux pas, then perhaps you'd be brave enough to share it with us, either by mailing us a sound recording or by leaving us a comment on the blog. I had a final word with Greg when I asked him to think about the long-term value of his internships.
Are you glad that you did those placements, or did they not give you very much at all?
No, I am glad, because I think without those placements, my time in France would have been spent solely at the college and would have been very much one version of life in France. And that version would have been, you know, quite a false atmosphere, given as it was in being in a sort of multicultural student environment, which is fine for that one place, but step out the doors and you see a very different world. So if nothing else, regardless of the success or failure of the work aspect of those placements, having the opportunity to work with the locals, to see how they behave, to hear the language, to see life outside the costed world of the college, was something that, again, I do not regret in one bit.
I don't know if you're in a position to employ anybody where you are at the moment, but say you were, would you look favourably on an applicant who had a stint abroad or not?
I think I would. The role that I'm involved in now relies very much on how you handle people. And having experience of working abroad, studying abroad, helps give people that broader sense of experience that allows them to manage people, different people with different attitudes, regardless of their nationality, on a much sort of easier level than somebody who may have any experience of the one town, the one company, what have you. So, yes, I think it is something that I probably would look at, amongst, obviously, the many criteria that you would consider.
Well, I hope this show has made you think hard whether anybody you know might have some useful information to pass on about intercultural matters in your immediate circle, whether family or friends. Our next show will be coming to you from Germany on November the 3rd, and in the meantime, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.